Okay.
This is an oral history interview with David Swanson on Thursday, October 30th, 2008, at Lewis Clark Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. I'd like to start off with our standard first question. Excuse me. Tell me a little bit about where you're from and how you got interested in landscape architecture.
So, I am currently living in Chapel Hill, and I've been in North Carolina since 1965. I was born and raised in Beirut, Lebanon. My family lived there for 10 years, and my father essentially retired to Chapel Hill. So I was a boy of 10 years old and grew up in the Triangle area, or Chapel Hill side of the Triangle. And through college, went through the Chapel Hill school systems, and my college years was actually spent at St. Andrew's College in Laurinburg, North Carolina. And we'll come back to that in a little bit, because that was one of the first campuses that Lewis designed, as I found out later. So at that time, I didn't know much about the profession of landscape architecture. My background in my college years was in environmental sciences, or environmental studies, and political science. And it sort of was nudging me toward planning, the planning end of the profession. And I didn't even know much about that. So I worked as a town planner for 3 years in the southeastern part of North Carolina. It was my first professional job. And just out of circumstances, was sort of ending up in a more of a city management role, just because of the small town, you ended up wearing all different hats. So when I did that for 3 years in planning, even though we were so small, we didn't really have much to plan. It was a very, very small town. But as I was making my career choices about what I wanted to do, I took a stab at the professional career discovery that they had at Harvard University. It was a good program, and I did that for a summer, mostly just to learn about what landscape architecture was about. And at that point, I had a choice to make, and I was deciding whether I wanted to go into a career of city planning or city management, to be a city manager, or to go into the profession of landscape architecture. So took a trip, and it was actually a pretty easy choice to make, and decided to go into landscape architecture, went to NC State.
What year was that?
That was in 1980, so however many, 28 years ago, can't believe it. It's okay, can't believe it. And so my first year, and this is what's going to make the full circle here, is I took a, you know, they have studios, and actually, was it my first year or my second year? I'm going to have to scratch.
Was it a four-year program? Or
Three-year program. And so I graduated in 1983. I should give you that background. And then I want to kind of make it sequential. So let me, before I go through my later years, it was actually, I remember the early studios is where I met Dean Kampeffner. He would come in. He wasn't affiliated with the school at that time. He had retired, but Dr. Kampeffner, am I saying that right? Anyway, Dean Kampeffner, I'll say. His little office was right in our studio, and he would sort of drift in and do his little whatever he did, piddling around, and then he would drift out. And then, you know, occasionally we would interface with him some, but that was my essential interaction with the dean, former dean. That was interesting times. And it was actually during my second or third semester, Lewis was on sabbatical. I'm sorry, somebody else was on sabbatical, and they asked Lewis to come in to do some teaching. And he and Dr. John Royer, I assume those who are listening to this would know John Royer's name. He was an architecture professor at NC State. He has since passed away. But he and John Royer and Lewis team taught a studio, and I was in that studio, and that's how I got to know Lewis initially. So to tell the story here, during the course of that semester, I asked Lewis if he took on summer, or excuse me, interns, or help, you know, office help, and as we'll come to in a few minutes here, he did. So I was able to get my first professional job working in a landscape architecture office, working for Lewis, while I was going in school. So that was actually my first year, and I did that for 2 years. I was working with Lewis while I was in school. I worked about 20 hours a week, and mostly doing models and things. In fact, I'll come back to that a little bit when I start talking about the professional career. So I graduated in 1983 with a master's in landscape architecture and continued working with Lewis for 2 years. Again, I want to come back to my years there.
Where was the office located?
We were at the Kroger Center. We were at the Kroger Center when I was interning there. And I think about that time is when he moved to this location at Glen Eden. And our staff at that time was really small. Of course, as you know, he had a much larger staff back in the early days.
Do you remember who was on staff then?
I do. Mm-hmm. Joel Mowlin was sort
Mowlin?
Of...
Mowlin?
Mowlin. Moulin. Joel. And Joel has gone on to other professional careers. In fact, I saw him not long ago. We saw him at the ASLA meeting in New Bern recently. And Susan Suggs was on staff. Susan's still active in the profession. She's down in Beaufort, actually, a little town of Beaufort. She has been working for the town of Beaufort, and then I think just recently is working for herself in private practice. And Maureen Ritchie, who left the area, and I've continued to stay friends with her, and she's moved into Connecticut. Maureen was an excellent landscape architect. And there was others. There was the office manager at the time. This is even before Nigel came. Was Quinn Tart, I want to say.
Yeah.
Micah, good memory.
Good for you.
We remember Quinn because I worked a lot with Quinn directly, and I remember some very fond memories of Quinn. And one of my first jobs was building this big model, and we built it out of chipboard, you know, the cardboard material. And even though Quinn was the office manager, like everything, you wear different hats, and he would come in and do the help on the model. And this was a very large model. It was quite complicated.
Do you remember what project it was?
It was Linville Ridge, which is basically a mountain. So the model we were building was, it was 6 feet long by 3.5 feet, and it was a mountain. It was a mountain. So the level of contours that we were carving out, and is all done by hand. We had to do the natural contours, which of course has all the contours of the mountain, as well as the road configurations that we had designed and the golf course and all the rest of it.
Wow.
And it was all done by hand and done out of this chipboard. So we'd have one piece of chipboard and then we'd lay it on top of the other and so on and so forth. And it got to be this very large, very incredibly heavy. Well, anyway, during the middle of that, poor Quinn sliced his fingers. I'll never forget that because the mat knife we were using, it just went right across his fingers.
Oh,
and that was one of those events that we...
There's danger in the
danger,
train.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I don't want to lose track. We'll come back to working on the days of working in Lewis's office. I want to finish my little career just to kind of wrap that part up. So I worked there for 4 years ultimately with Lewis, and that was essentially my tenure. Although I've continued to stay in relationship with Lewis on occasion, and then and certainly with Nigel. Then I worked for at the time was known as Hunter Reynolds Jewell, and Sam Reynolds was the principal in charge, and still now it's known as Reynolds Jewell. Sam, interestingly enough, also worked at Lewis, and as we'll talk in a few minutes, a lot of the firms that are established in the Triangle area, but really throughout, either worked with Lewis, Clark, or Dick Bell. You know, that's typically where they would start, get their early years, and I was one of those, and Sam was in the generation before me. But anyway, they hired me as a project manager, and I worked there for 4 years, and that was through 1988, So exactly 20 years ago, I left there and I opened up my own little shop in Chapel Hill, and I've been basically working for myself for 20 years as a landscape architecture firm. And I won't go into all the details of my professional career there, but anyway, to make it upshot, it's been a very it's a success. We're a small firm, but it's a successful firm. A large part attributed to the experiences I had in places like here. And golly, let's see. So that brings me to now. I mean, it's now 2008. So 20 years later, like a lot of us, you also have extracurricular activities in the profession. So I've been active in the ASLA, and been active as the chair of the alumni advisory board for NC State, and then just this past year, Nigel Clark has taken my position. So that's kind of a nice little segue as well. And so I did that for I think two or 3 years, and then I've been on that alumni group for 6 or 8 years. Seems like a long time. So I'm still active in the school.
Are you teaching a course there?
I've taught courses there over the years as an adjunct professor, and I'm currently teaching at UNC. So I'm not making the trip over here, but I'm teaching site planning over at Carolina. Anyway, that's to say that's my kind of a summary of my professional career, and then also to let you know that I am active in other landscape architecture activities and to some degree teaching, I
Not
think.
retired by any
Oh my
means.
gosh, no, I'm not hopefully not old enough to. So let me talk a little bit about Lewis and my. I assume that's where you want. Do you have other questions,
No,
or
go.
that was your
Please go
question?
ahead.
Okay. It's interesting how when I describe my track through Lewis's office, and then how people like myself started their own firms, or even worked at other firms that had some affiliation with Lewis's office. I also oftentimes remember Lewis himself saying that he was sort of like a kindergarten. His office was like a little kindergarten, because he was essentially young, right out of school. I say kids, but they're young professionals in school or right out of school. They got their they basically cut their teeth learning from Lewis and getting exposure with the wonderful jobs that he had at the time. And then, like a lot of offices, you work there for whatever period of time, and then they'd go off and do their own thing, either establishing their own firm or working at another office. But I would say a great majority of the people, I could start listing other names, but a lot of folks would have gotten their experiences here. And I remember years before I was here, his office, as I understand it, was 30 people, 30, 40 people. I mean, it was much larger back in the 70s, and they had the all the airplane act, all that sort of thing that other people can tell you about. That was not my generation. But I will want to come back to say that when I was there, he had scaled back. The firm had scaled way back to a really a pretty small. As I was saying, it was just as Quinn, as the office manager, and Joel, and Susan, and Maureen, and then there may have been another student or two at the time as well. But that's just a handful of 5 or 6 people. And what I felt, I say honored, but it was a real to I guess you might say mentor to have Lewis. I felt like Joel was a project manager, a more senior landscape architect, so he interfaced with Lewis somewhat, but he had his own projects. Oh, and of course, let me stop a moment. I left out a very important person of Lewis's office, which is Wayne McBride, and he was the principal with Lewis. They're partners, so I failed to mention that, but that was the office at the time. So Joel and Wayne were primarily doing
That's Joel, who?
Joel Mallon,
Oh,
the
Mallon.
person I mentioned before. He was sort of one of the senior landscape architects, and then Wayne was the principal, and he had his own projects, and then Lewis had his own projects. And I came along at a time, it wasn't just me, but people like me, where I would be sort of like Lewis's right-hand man. So Lewis would come up with the designs, and essentially I'd be a draftsman to draw it up. That's, you can't ask for a better way to learn. Mm-hmm. So that was a wonderful opportunity to learn both from a design standpoint, but as well as all the drawing up, the drafting skills and things that we need to learn as we go through our professional careers. What an honor to get a chance to work with Lewis in that respect. And I can think of some projects now, and I'll still go back to my years here. At the time he was doing, as he did throughout so many of his career, and that showed up on the wall, the big resort communities and the large land planning. And we did Carolina Trace and a lot of the Linville projects, and I got involved in some of the ones down in a lot of the ones down in the Pinehurst area, and as well as I got a little bit involved with the ones down in the Hilton Head Island area, those Sea Pines. Most of those I think he had been involved with much earlier. Those were happening in the early 70s and mid 70s. Let's see. So anyway, that my interface with Lewis was he would primarily work out designs, and I would tag along as a young in school or right out of school kind of person. He would have me meet the clients, and then he'd basically do a trash drawing or a study, and then hand it over to me and whoever else was in the office to work out the little details, and we would kind of take it to that next level. And then, of course, when presentations and so on, either Lewis and or Wayne would be the one to present these things to the clients. So it was great. It was wonderful times. I think the earlier times when the office was larger, they probably had it much more structured business wise than when I was there, because it was very casual when we were there. And maybe others could speak of another generation before me, but it was we didn't worry about all the business stuff too much. It was mostly just the pleasure and joy of doing good design and working with our clients and so on. So it was great at that early stage in my career, and certainly to get the interface with Lewis a little bit. And I don't know what the questions you have, but I want to make sure I get a little bit about that St. Andrews experience.
Sure, I was going to ask you if you could remember some more projects.
Okay, well let me, this is actually one I didn't work on, but it's one that sort of came back to me. And I want to speak a little bit about it. Is the St. Andrews College, and I think, when I think of Lewis and the legacy that he's left our profession and the state of North Carolina, and really this whole Southeast region, there's several notable projects that I think ought to be highlighted, and that's certainly one of them, the St. Andrews, and primarily because, as I understand this, again, way before my time, this happened in the 1959, as I recall, 58 is when he was going through the design process, and I don't know all the details, but the college was, as was happening at that time, it was an explosion of educational facilities, educational and academic communities, and because of mostly the population, that bulging population boom, and there was that generation was coming out, and there was just this. Explosion of new campuses. So Lewis was incredibly active in both community colleges, and he was designing so many of the community colleges in the state of North Carolina, as well as this master plan for the St. Andrews College. And at that time, there weren't that many master plans that were done for new colleges, new whole brand new campuses. And so I remember him telling me specifically, and in fact, let me back up and see, even tell you how this came to play, or how he was telling me this story. Of course, as I said earlier, I went to St. Andrews, and then later on, I was asked to help do some work at St. Andrews, and I said, "Well, gosh, let me introduce you to the person that designed it, to Lewis, who actually laid out the campus." So I actually had the vice president of the college. He's now the president of the college, but I had the vice president come up. Meet right here in the office. In fact, we sat in this very room, Paul Baldassare, and Lewis was kind enough to take some time and this is only about 6 years ago, maybe 6-7 years ago, he pulled out all the master plan drawings of the college. He went right back in the room and pulled out the drawings, laid them out all on the table. We took almost a whole afternoon. In fact, after all of it, we went out for dinner, and it was so nice. It was a wonderful evening. But Lewis basically described the whole process, and it was, these things need to be recorded. I mean, to have Lewis tell you the story of how that community, how that college was conceived. I think he was telling, I remember him saying that the, I say fathers, but the founding fathers of the college at the time, they were going to put us, essentially strip it along the highway. It was just the practical thing to do. They would just take the college buildings and go along the state highway there and build the new buildings. They hired Odell Associates out of Charlotte, I believe, to design the buildings. And it was through Lewis's, maybe others, but it was through his creativity and his foresight that he said, no, we need to create a new campus. We're going to make an academic campus on this side, and where all the buildings, the science building, the library, and all the academia and those kind of facilities would be. And on this side, and he created this wonderful lake, which was the centerpiece of the whole campus, Lake Ansley Moore, as it's known now. But then on the other side of the lake, which is where all the dormitories were and the cafeteria and the living areas, the community sort of communal spaces of the campus, and with this wonderful pedestrian connection in between. And so it's really just a different concept that was never done. Nothing was like that ever done at the time. And so, through Lewis's, that was cutting edge back in the late 50s when you think about it. And then they built it all at once. It's showing its age now, which is why they're having to renovate and do some things. I mean, this has been, 60 years ago. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting story, and it was such a wonderful thing to have the college vice president come up and meet Lewis and hear that,
really?
That history. There's so many other projects that, the ones that the office did, that I personally was involved with, that wasn't necessarily through Lewis, the Elon College projects, that was mostly Wayne McBride's work, and that was mostly his clients. The ones that I was involved with was a land planning side of was the Ford, the clients was called the Fords, or they were the Ford family, not the Ford of the Ford automobile, but that was their name. And they did, they had one that was in Kiwi, which is near Lake Lanier in Georgia, and actually in South Carolina, I should say. And it was a large golf course, land planning, resort kind of community, and I worked on that one. And that was interesting to see the interface between the clients and Lewis and how he worked with them. And then that same client had another one in the Williamsburg area called, I think it's actually called Ford's Colony, which is all built now. I mean, these are 25 years old.
Do you remember how many acres?
Oh, I would have to think there were probably either 1,500 acres or well over 1,000 acres.
So not small projects.
Oh, not small projects at all. No, these are very large. And in the case of the Kiwi Island, Kiwi, it had a very large lake in it. It was around Lake Lanier, I think, which is a very large lake in I guess, South Carolina. But yeah, the projects, and then the ones down in Pinehurst, we did one in Pinehurst, which, gosh, what an honor for a young, right out of school kid to get the opportunity to work with Robert Trent Jones, which is the golf course architect. For anybody listening and knows the big name players, Robert Trent Jones himself came to this very office and sat at that very table at the end of the, there was a big working space table, and it was just me and Lewis and Robert Trent Jones. This is the senior guy, I mean, the older guy, and he's the one that designed some of the most notable golf courses in the country.
Was the project you were working on Carolina Trace?
That might have been one of the Carolina Trace projects, so I think that was a Robert Trent Jones course, and then I think this particular project was called Pinehurst International, and I don't think it was built. I think it was one of the ones that was master planned, in somewhat of a speculative way, and I don't remember the circumstances of how it was, but it was also whoever the client, I don't even remember the client, to be honest with you, but the client probably assembled all the properties and hired Lewis for the master planning and Robert Chan Jones for the golf course architecture and laid it all out. And to be honest with you, I don't remember the details after that, but I don't think that one was, something was built there, and I don't remember, because it was incredibly, it was right off the circle in downtown Pinehurst, you know, the main circle. So, and obviously a very prominent location. So, and then another project I wanted to mention, that this is a much smaller scale, Lewis worked on it for years and years and years before I was there, was Elizabethan Gardens down in Manio. And I think he's had a long-term relationship with the gardens, and I imagine he was involved in laying out some aspects of it. I don't even remember. But they asked him, you know, like a lot of all our, even my current professional status now, you get called in later on to help with some such and such, to help out. And so they called. What happened is, I think it was Queen Elizabeth herself, oh gosh, I don't remember the whole story, but Queen Elizabeth herself either gave, and not her personally, but her body, if you will, the royalty, gave to the Elizabethan Rose Garden, Elizabethan Gardens in Manio, a little structure, and it was going to be dedicated to Queen Elizabeth. I hope I'm saying this right. And Lewis was asked to draw a sketch, and so I was actually, this was one of those when I was a student still, and he just drew it on trash paper, and then I think I actually helped draw the got the perspective right. I think that was my job, to help get the, you know, to make it so it was rendered, and then I think I helped render it, because Lewis had a very interesting rendering style. I'm looking up at some of these are his pictures, but some of his other artwork. It was a very, his own unique style. Another little fun thing that I remember I personally helped him with, this is, he made little Christmas cards, and he did them of sailboats, not unlike the one you see here, and he created this little sailboat. We would turn that into sepia paper, and then I think me and Quinn, or Quinn and myself, or whatever the right word, we turned that into Christmas cards for Lewis. So that was fun.
So you worked very close.
Very close, I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I don't know what other questions you have, but what a significance, and maybe that needs to, maybe we need to start talking about that, the significance he had to both individuals, people like myself, young people in the early parts of their profession, and to both the people he taught. I mean, you know, he taught, I mean, I guess to other people, and hopefully in your oral histories you've gotten the background of his history. I mean, I know a little bit of it. I don't know everything, but I know he started teaching in 1952, I believe, and it was interesting. I remember him telling the story, and maybe this is my interpretation of it, but he was at Harvard, and he could have gone anywhere. A lot, in fact, Royston and a lot of the other, and what's the other fella who's now in Seattle? You knew Halperin. He's of that school. You know, he went with Halperin, and then the I'll think of it in a moment. But anyway, the other old time name is, he could have gone anywhere, and so. Don't remember exactly how he ended up here in the South, but I remember him saying there was nothing going on in the South, and they asked him, Dean Kampenhoff, that's how he ended up here, was Dean Kampenhoffner invited him to teach. That's how he ended up here. And so the other people, his colleagues, said he's crazy to come down here in the South because there was nothing going on. You go to Boston, go to San Francisco, go up, and Lewis, of course, could have gone anywhere. But Kampenhoffner was arranging this, or this collecting this wonderful group of young, talented professionals for the school, which was early. These were in the early years of the college, or at the school at the time. And Bucky Fuller and all those other people, you know, way back then, before I was born. And so Lewis started back then, and I remember him saying that I guess he taught, and then during the course of those early years, he also started a young practice. So he started his, and that's where the St. Andrew's College job, he was in his 30s, I think. And he got this, I guess he started his practice and then got these clients, and it built up from there. And that's what, again, when I mentioned about that St. Andrew's story, it made it very notable because he was so young. I think it's just somebody else needs to tell the story of how he ended up down here in the South and what a difference he made in the South. Because at that time, you think of what was happening in the 50s in North Carolina, mostly an agrarian state, tobacco and textiles and furniture. And, the whole profession of architecture probably wasn't even that significant. Well, certainly landscape architecture wasn't that significant. I think my own history tells me that Earl Draper was one of the other notable early landscape architects that came down to North Carolina, but mostly designing mill towns for the mill villages of all the textile companies. But when Lewis came, and I think he was telling me the story that because the profession wasn't known, he had to go through the education process to explain to people what we as landscape architects do. He had to establish fees, because they didn't know how to pay what a landscape architecture did.
Nobody's ever brought that part up.
Oh, and I remember him telling me how little they would get paid for jobs. And, he had to go through an education process to explain to clients so they knew how to pay, that we provided a service that had a value, was significant enough to get paid what we should be worth, Otherwise, they treated us as landscapers or, plant people or something. And, they just didn't understand what we as landscape architects did. So he was in that period of time. We still are there. People don't know what we do as landscape architects. But, this is 2008. But back in the 50s, I have to think that, here in the South, people just didn't have a clue about what landscape architecture profession was. And, here this wonderful, young, talented would come down and he had to carve out his own little discipline, if you will, working with other architects and other land planning professionals and so on. He, I guess, was fortunate, this is again way before my time, but to get clients like Willie York, which is Smeeds York's father, to do some of the big projects that Willie York used to be mayor of. Smeeds York was mayor of Raleigh, and I think Willie York was mayor of Raleigh too, years ago. Big political name in Raleigh. It started the Cameron Village, first shopping center in the southeast, I think. And so Lewis worked, he did Willie York's house. And I was fortunate enough to see it. It was all been torn down. I think it's a shopping center now. In fact, I know it's a shopping center. It's an ugly shopping center, big shopping mall. But Lewis did the house. And it had a grottos, and that's what's in these drawings, and hopefully documented somewhere, because it had these incredible lakes, and I remember seeing the grotto, because they told me about the grotto, and I was fortunate enough to see it. It was abandoned. The house was abandoned at the time I saw it. But
what made his designs different from other art landscape architects?
Probably a lot of it had to do with the design process. So and also his clients. So I guess I answer that in a lot of different ways. He had unique clients. So his clients and the kind of work he did was of a scale that many other landscape architects didn't do. So he did these very large land planning and resort plannings, which at the time, you have to remember, we don't do this as much these days, but back in certainly the 70s, when they were doing the Hilton Head Island Resorts, and the clients was people like the Rouse Company, which is a major company up in the Baltimore area, and the what's his name that did the Hilton Head Island? He was one of the biggest developers of the time, and he hired Lewis, and a visionary. The developer himself was a visionary to design. Land communities where it respected the land, and laying out the roads, laying out the golf courses, and all the other to respect the wetlands and all the other, rather than just strip it. I mean, they were hiring a landscape architect, and they hired Lewis. I mean, he was the one that they looked to, and he designed these communities, which looked at the natural features, the natural landforms, and the ecology of the land, if you will, when that wasn't the thing to do. I mean, you know, these people didn't do it back then. And certainly back then, I mean, that's not to say the resorts weren't, I mean, it wasn't unique to Lewis, but the Lewis was unique to doing resorts in North Carolina, and even in the Southeast. There weren't that many others. Robert Marvin, and I guess the Pinckneys down in the South the Charleston area were probably the two or three others that were doing it. I don't even think Dick Bell was doing that many of that type of developments here in Raleigh. His was colleges and other sort of a different scale of work of the community of landscape architects. So that was, to answer your question, it's his clients and the kind of work he was doing that made him unique. And his process, when I go back to the process, he had an air about him and a way about him, incredibly creative. I mean, you know, he would just see things. He could see, you know, I respect this now because I have the 25 or 30 years of experience to understand where he was coming from. But when somebody draws a line on a piece of paper, you know what that line translates to. You know, it translates to the grades or the representing, you know, whatever that those lines on a piece of paper meant. Well, he knows what it meant because he had the experience and so to somebody to have that experience and then just to translate it in very quick gestures on a piece of paper, laying out a road or laying out a siding for a house or building or whatever it is, and then to see it come into as that went through the next levels of the progression of the design process, which Lewis did not typically get involved with. He was early on the early stages, but he didn't get involved in the working drawings as a rule. He would check them, but not do them, at least when I was there. So anyway, just that valuable of his experience, and then to translate that into this wonderful design process.
We'll change direction just a little bit. I'm going to ask you some things about Lewis. You shared so many things so far, but I have a few other questions. What kind of boss was he?
Bit crazy.
How do you mean?
Well,
crazy?
I mean, you know, unconventional. So, when I'm sitting in this very building here at Glen Eden, I have memories of it was that way in the Kroger Center as well. But Nigel came on board. Nigel, being his son, but also, I don't remember Nigel's early enough career, but he didn't have the. He was mostly here just as a son and also as a helper. And Nigel was raising birds at the time. So I'm coming back to your question about the boss, because I have to tell this little segue about Nigel first. But Nigel was raising birds, and he had a huge aviary, and I don't know how many birds, maybe 30 or 50 birds, or it doesn't matter. But and all kinds of their parakeets and cockatiels and cockatoos and Lord knows what all. But there's lots of different kinds of birds. And so he gave Nigel gave his dad this great big African gray parrot. And then he would bring other birds in the office. So we were sitting in our drafting tables, and we'd have a little cockatiel, like a little parakeet, but sitting on your drafting table or in your drafting lamp. And then Lewis would have his African gray. I don't remember the bird's name.
Rodney. Either
Rodney, of course. Thank you. I'm sorry I missed that. But anyway, Rodney, that's right. He had it sitting on his shoulder or on his head or Lord knows what all. But you know, it'd be there, screeching and making all this crazy noises. And you know, that I think that captures, when I say crazy, I mean that sort of captures the environment that you're working in, being unconventional. So, you know, that kind of, I mean, you know, there was the other side of it when he interfaced with his clients, and you could see him play the you know, put his professional hat on, you could really see the sales job coming into play when he would be selling a design or kind of going through that, and you could see that wasn't, that's not boss, that's more of his professional his manner, if you will. But as a boss, I mean, gosh, he was a delight. I mean, you know, you have to remember, I was in my relatively short years, it was new, and I was only here very young, so I had a lot of flexibility and leeway, and I was basically like his right-hand man. It was just wonderful to come in and, you know, flexible hours, all that stuff. It was great.
What was an unusual task that he put you to at some time?
Probably moving. One of the challenging tasks was moving the whole office from the Kroger Center to here. And, you know, what is it, 35 years worth of drawings? And it's, I guess they're still here. They're in the back, yeah. And so it was just me and one other staff person, I think, at the time. Maybe Nigel, I don't remember who all, but yeah, it was a job. And I remember getting stuff up in the attic. Was the stuff still up in the attic?
Oh, they took it down when they did some remodeling.
Oh, okay, well, anyway.
But there was quite a bit up there.
Well, we had to get it all up in there. What a job. I mean, you know, just the paper gets very heavy. And, you know, trying to move paper around and lug things around and set the whole office up and figure out the layout and all that sort of thing. So that was a task. That wasn't necessarily fun. But I remember him even... I was too young and I didn't have enough career or credibility in the office to have an ownership stake or anything enough. I mean, I was a clear employee, but I remember them going through the designing of the office and laying out the rooms and who was going to go where and how they're so on. That was kind of interesting. I went on any of the fun trips. I remember years before I was involved in the office, they would go on fun trips, and you know, they had Lewis's boat or something, and I think they did do some of that, but I didn't get to do that. But you know, we did client trips; those were fun. That's not what I would call a task. Probably the worst task was just moving. Moving is never fun.
Can you think of any other projects you'd like to comment on?
Well, I've covered a lot of the one. I think I covered a diversity of projects, you know, the larger scale projects, now mostly the ones that I interfaced with Lewis, because I also interfaced with Wayne McBride as well, and that Wayne had his own clients,
right.
So and typically they were separate. So I'm not going to go into those, but the ones that I worked with Lewis on, it typically was the land planning projects. And some of the smaller scale, I have to tell you one story though. This was one that when I was first interning here, and it was me and another young girl. I say young girl; she was my age, but you know, probably in her 30s. She was a mother, so she wasn't. And she came, and Lewis gave her the task of working with one of his former clients. It was an old friend of his who had, I guess, the Jolly Roger Motel down on the coast, down on one of the Wilmington or Riceville Beach or one of those coastal communities. And so Beth, that was Beth Pastore, and it was her job to design a billboard. I have to tell you, that was that was the wrong thing to give to Beth, the wrong project, because. One, designing a billboard. I mean, you know, that wasn't the right thing to give to. You know, we were at school. We were trying to do grandiose things. But anyway, that was not a pleasant experience for her to do. That was a whole side story to that one. But it kind of goes to show that we work on all kinds of projects. And, you know, that's typical for an office. You do everything from a small, for a friend client. I mean, you would do something like a favor. It's probably more of a favor. Designing the billboard for the Jolly Roger Motel, and he gave it to Beth.
I'm reminded of the North Carolina Zoo because
because
the signage and the some of the printed materials like the what's known as the zoo booklet. They did that when you were here.
I was there, exactly. And let me tell you, that's come full circle now because I'm working. In fact, the meeting I had just before I met with you, it was over at Frank Harmon's office, which is another architect friend of Lewis's, and anybody who's listening to this knows Frank. And we're designing together a children's discovery garden at the zoo. And that's just what I've been doing this afternoon. And I'm doing four other projects at the zoo. The gorilla habitat, I'm doing a honeybee exhibit, and I'm doing a geyser project at the zoo. So it's gone full circle for me. This is my own, that's work I'm doing in my own profession. But when I worked here, the office was doing the African Pavilion. That was the big, it's now, they're getting ready to tear it down, amazingly enough. But it was cutting edge architecture at the time, and they worked with Hayes Howell down in Southern Pines, designing the African Pavilion area. And so those were site-specific designs that Lewis did later in his career that happened to come when I was there. But just before my career is when he did the master planning for the zoo, and they did the booklet, the wonderful master plan, and that was cutting edge at the time. I think that was done in, I want to say, early 70s, 73, 75, sometime during that period of time. You'd have to check. I've actually got a copy of the booklet that Lewis gave me, which was nice. At that time, you have to remember, this is not, we do it now, we don't even think about it, but you team up with people. So they teamed up with ecologists, and we teamed up with specialists in the zoo architecture, zoo exhibits and all that. And so they put all this team together, and that was cutting edge for its time back in those early 70s period of time. And they came up with this wonderful document that was now the master plan for the zoo, which is still being implemented.
No kidding. How did your experience with Lewis affect your own practice and teaching methods?
More so with practice. Is where, and I, you know, I think it's just part of, and I won't even call it to my own personal experiences, but just more the broader of all the people that came through Lewis's office, people like Sam Reynolds and Dick Patton Lamar Bunn and all these other names that came through that have since gone off and done their own offices. Well, if you didn't have experiences working in an office, you wouldn't know where to get started. So he gave you the experience of working in an office, gave you the experience of working with clients, working with as project manager on your own projects, and he gave you that freedom to do it. In a more structured office, you wouldn't get the opportunity to do that. And I think through Lewis and through Lewis personally, he was very open to sharing. And giving those young people at the time, including myself, opportunity. And so that more than anything probably has rubbed off on me, and I want to share it with the young people that I'm associated with, my cohort, my mentees, if you will, and students. And I think that's the way that our profession is going to grow. And Lewis rubbed that off on me. We're only going to get better by sharing what we know. And he did it with me, and I'm so grateful.
What's the one important thing to know about Lewis Clark?
The one important thing. He's got a good laugh. He's always can laugh and keep a sense of humor. I think he's got a good perspective on our profession. I would have to say goes with just experience. I think a lot of young people now that they get too caught up in certainly an environmental movement or all the sustainability that we get so focused in on things we lose perspective. And I think he has that broad perspective and history. And experience to just have the, I guess, understanding of how we fit in the overall culture of our larger landscape. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I think that it's very significant. I think that's what makes him unique.
What's the one important thing to know about David Swanson?
Oh, Lordy. Well, you know, I hope that, you know, it's like a Barack Obama. I'm wearing a Barack Obama t-shirt, and I hope in 6 days that he'll be, and he gave this half-hour infomercial last night, and then somebody asked him on the commercial, I think it was during that, or maybe Katie Couric, or one of these things, he gave, what would you like to put on your tombstone? You know, that you're a, and I think he said, you're a good dad, and you're a good, you know, good father of his children, and a good wife, and all that sort of stuff. Well, yes, I hope I can be all that, but I hope that I can be as an influence on other people. I think, you know, the designs are one thing, the legacy of the landscapes you leave behind, but even that's temporal. I mean, you know, those things are being erased, and it's just one of those things in our, it's sad to say, but a lot of the designs that Lewis came up with, and even the things I've designed, they'd be tore down now, you know, because there's something else happening. But as much as anything, it's the influence that we leave with people, both our clients and the young people that we, and people like that Lewis did with me, and hopefully I will do with other people. So that's something.
Yeah. What's the one important thing to know about landscape architecture today?
Probably that's not, there's not one important thing. There's many important things, I guess. We are a diverse profession. It's, we are such exciting times. I mean, we're in challenging times, but I remember Lewis when he was just 6 months ago when they were giving out some awards, part of his, with Lewis, Dick Bell and Ken Coulter, when they're doing the movie, Lewis gave some little remarks about that he was talking to the students, and he said, we are in such exciting times, you know, and with the economy the state is in, and all the political turmoil and the world, kind of the crazy stuff that's going on in the world, you have to look at it as an opportunity. And we are, the profession of landscape architecture is in such a wonderful and unique position to play a large role in where we're going to head in energy and land, in the preservation and the, and how we're going to use our land in the future. And you know, it's professions like us and the professions that we're going to interface with that's going to shape that. And the young people who hopefully are listening to this, or however you're documenting it, will you know, take to heart that we can make a change.
Well, David, I want to thank you for talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
We'll close out with that.
Great. That was fun.